Welcome back to Your Tech Report. For gadget news and reviews, click to yourtechreport.com.
We're back on Your Tech Report. Thank you guys for being with us each and every single week. I'm very excited to be welcomed by the editor-in-chief of Mobile Syrup, Patrick O'Rourke. Welcome back to the show. So many things to potentially talk about. So let's start with Apple and M3 processors, because it's been about a month now since they made that spooky, Halloween. So not even a month, 2 weeks now. You've had an opportunity to play with M3. One of the biggest takeaways that everybody's talking about is the fact that they compared M3 to M1. So, you know, in real world use cases here, is that justified for you as to why? Is there a reason? Is it because the significance from M2 to M3 is just not that big?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to sell it during those presentations, right? And that Apple event was a little bit different. It was in the evening. That's not something we typically see. And I think Apple knew that the benchmarks between the M2 Pro and the M3 Pro weren't going to be that significant. And based on what we've seen, like I haven't benchmarked an M3 Pro. But I have benchmarked an M3 Max versus the M2 Max. And we've also seen like the M3 and the M2, obviously, comparison wise. And it's a bit of like the law of diminishing returns at play between the M3 and the M2. It's not that big. So from a marketing perspective, I get why Apple did that during the presentation. It's a little sneaky, but that's not to say that there aren't gains, right? They are more powerful chips across the board. There's some things with memory bandwidth being a bit slower that's a little bit over my head, but they are a gain. That's the key thing that I'm taking away.
My understanding with the memory bandwidth is that on the base 8 gig machines, whereas the CPU itself offloads a lot of that work, the 8 gigs of RAM just isn't just enough to offload what it needs to in that short-term memory. So it does bottleneck down the CPU. So they're saying that get the 16 gig and you'll be laughing, which is funny because I've got an M1 Mac Mini, you know, that not Max, not Pro, it was one of the first that came out that I still have running to this day. And I'm editing 4K video on this thing without any issue, without any bottlenecks. So it's kind of funny to see people running these tests and benchmarks on the M3s that, because when anybody asks me, I don't know, I'm sure you get the question all the time, what should I do? Should I upgrade? And I'm like, if your computer's an M1 and it's working, forget about what's in there. Why would you spend any money? You know, unless there's something that's really bottlenecking down in what your workflow, right?
You really don't need to upgrade from the M1 to the M3. I think most people will even be able to wait till the M4, the M5. The M1 was just like such a big leap over what Intel was doing at the time, even in terms of like battery life. Like, it was night and day from using an Intel Mac to an M1 Mac. For my purposes, like I have, Apple sends me these things to try out, so I have the privilege of always having the latest and greatest, but I have like an M1 Max sitting in my closet behind me, and I'd be more than happy to continue using that. That remains overkill for my purposes, which is like word processing, some photo editing, a bit of video, and a bit of audio. Like, that thing's more than good enough. And I think for most people, like, sure, some people need the latest and greatest, but it all comes down to what you're doing with the actual chip, really.
The new space black color is so funny because I even find myself walking into an Apple store going, do I need a new computer just because there's a new color out there? And it almost feels like it's like driving a brand name car. Like, we have this, and some people are a bit more overt with it. Some people aren't, where they want the shiniest and greatest. And the only way to do that in the Apple world is to get whatever the new color might be, so people can see that you're using it. Have you had experiences with that color laptop yet? Have you actually tried it out?
Yeah, I'm the type of person, and I think I've said this before, and I've been talking to you, where like I really care about what a product looks like. That's more just the way that I'm programmed, more what I'm into, more what I like to write about than the hardware inside it. So when I'm covering something like the M3 and have to do benchmarks and stuff, it's a little bit of torture for me because it's not my forte, so to speak. But there is a paragraph in my story where I kind of wax poetic about the new space black color. I really like it. I've missed having a black MacBook since the one that was around in the 2000s with one of the older models. Looks really sleek. I wouldn't necessarily call it black the way that Apple does. It's kind of a grayish color, like a dark space gray. I was very amazed by the new coating on it. That's repels grease. Apple really doesn't want people to call it a coating. They want it to be called a seal, which is interesting. I don't really understand why or the difference between it, but that's the marketing that they're pushing. It works quite well. Like when I was at the event, there's obviously people all over the place touching it. Everybody's got greasy fingers. That Mac remained extremely, extremely grease and smudge free. And I was blown away by it. And then when I got it home, after talking about how great it is on Twitter and Threads and whatnot, I like ran some experiments myself, and it wasn't quite as good as what it looked like at the event. So I don't know if Apple had someone there like constantly cleaning it or some sort of additional coating on it. It didn't work quite as well. Like if I grab the M3 Max, like I'm doing this podcast with you on, and my hands are relatively clean, you won't really see that much grease. But like in day-to-day use, like I was at the Mobile Surf office last week and didn't have a case on the laptop, was just carrying it around to see what it would look like at the end of the day. It's still a bit of a mess. Like it's not as good as it may have looked like at the outset, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. And I hope Apple brings this crazy grease resistant technology to everything it releases down the line and continues to improve on it.
So are we done for the holiday season, you think, with Apple? No more announcements before I think we're kind of set, right? Hopefully.
Yeah, I don't see anything else coming. Like right before I got on this pod with you, I was writing something about there's rumors from a reliable Apple analyst that we'll see new iPads in the new year, but likely probably the Air, maybe the base level, and then the iPad Pro in Q2 2024. But I think for the foreseeable future, at least until after the holidays and whatnot, we're not going to see anything. Major from Apple, maybe like software updates, but nothing significant on that.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because there was a story I was reading that Craig Federighi had kind of put the brakes on the next iOS, 18 at this point, in order to focus more on squashing bugs that exist in the current operating system. I found that kind of telling and kind of interesting that they were talking about this, because normally you don't hear about this kind of stuff. It's just, you know, just happens. But I think we've come to the point, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, that software is really almost more important than the hardware these days, because the hardware iterations aren't happening as fast as they used to and as impressive and as significant as they used to. So software needs to be so polished in order to set the bar at a certain point and set it apart. Do you feel that that's kind of the case, hence stories like this?
I think you definitely see that on the iPhone and the Apple Watch side. Like every year I'll review the new iPhone and I'll review the new Apple Watch. And a lot of those features that are coming to the latest device are also coming to earlier devices, right? Like they're not tied to hardware in any intrinsic way. The Apple Watch is a great example of this year. Like if you're using a Series 9 or you're using a Series 8, first of all, they look the same. Sure, the 9 has the new chip, but they're both going to run Watch OS 10. So they're going to have the smart stack and all those cool new features. In many ways, WatchOS 10 makes your older Apple Watch, as long as it supports that operating system, feel like a new device in some ways. And I think that based on that story, which I briefly looked at this morning, I think you're going to start to see that with iOS. Like maybe down the line, after they get this very stable release, you'll start to see more significant additions to the operating system. Because at least, like, I know new things get added every year, but at least for the last few years, iOS has felt very much kind of stagnant to some extent. There's nothing super exciting being added to it. So I definitely agree with you in that.
What do you think they need to do in terms of competing with Intel? Because Intel is said to be, you know, launching some pretty impressive chips. Of course, you know, compared to M1, we don't know what that's going to be, but that could bring Intel back into the conversation, at least when it comes to, you know, competing with those lineup or bringing the price down and battery life, et cetera, et cetera. Is it a hardware thing? Do you think that Apple needs to do to make sure they're ahead of the game, or just kind of keep doing what they're doing and ignore the competition?
I think they should pay attention to what Intel's doing, because I don't want to see Apple lose this gain. And I also think it's great that Intel's releasing a chipset, or a rumored to be a chipset, that's going to be a pretty substantial leap, because competition's good, right? Intel will push Apple to do new things. Apple will push Intel to do new things. I think that's what you're seeing right now. I'll kind of believe it when I see it, because I've heard this before with Intel chips, and our PC expert on the Mobile Surf team kind of also doesn't totally believe it's going to happen. He's excited because he's like a Windows guy through and through, and he he really wants to see those battery life gains on Intel chips. But yeah, I think that both companies kind of need to pay attention to what the other is doing. Right now, Apple has the lead, and I think that's why we saw the M3s drop a little bit earlier than expected. A lot of people thought these wouldn't come out until the new year, and then all of a sudden, boom, we got all these M3 chips in this kind of surprise event. And I think to some extent that was Apple trying to steal Intel's thunder with the new chips that they're supposedly working on that will likely launch very early in the new year.
Last week, we saw the official introduction of this new Humane pin. This new, how do you describe this thing? It kind of looks like a small matchbook with a magnetic battery that attaches behind your clothing with a bunch of sensors on board. Like, it's like bringing the Star Trek communicator to life, a little bit bigger and bulkier. What do you think this means for AI in general? And we don't know, none of us have had our time, I think, to touch it yet, right? We really don't know what the experience is like. So this is truly just us kind of guessing here. But it looks promising, right? It looks kind of cool.
It looks, so this is the way I've been describing it. Like, it looks really cool. I would love to try one. I would love to spend a week messing around with one. Yeah. I love, lack of a better way to describe this, like silly tech gadgets like this. This is like what I live for. This is my bread and butter. I just don't see this appealing to a wider audience at all in any way. I know that AI and like ChatGPT and everything is being kind of positioned as the future of where tech is going. And a lot of different startups and companies are trying to find ways to meld that machine learning language stuff with hardware. And this is that latest effort. I don't want to crap all over it because I haven't used it, but I just like the idea of putting something on my shirt, being able to talk to it and like ask it questions, take photos. I would just rather use my phone. Like, that's what I always come back to. Like, I would rather just pop out my phone and look at it. I know there's the convenience factor. It might be the type of thing where like I need to try it and then I'm sold on the concept. There's people on the mobile serve team that think this is the future. Like, this is the future of technology. We're not going to use smartphones anymore. This is the device. So I'm a little on the fence for, based on what I've seen, I don't see it yet, but it's the kind of thing that I would love to actually like get my hands on it and try and see if it works.
It's funny because, you know, the whole, you know, large language models and the ChatGPT, it seems like it's a fad almost in one aspect of things, but you see the potential there. But as you said, I don't know if this thing that I'm holding like a hard drive to my chest, right, this thing that I'm wearing all day long is the solution for it. I already have a watch on. I've already got the phone in my pocket. So I'm totally with you. Even like, you know, the Meta Frames, for example, you know, if you've got a pair of glasses on that have the speakers, everything kind of does what this is going to do. So what can it possibly do differently, especially when you're going to spend $600 for it and then $25 a month? I definitely want to get my hands on it as well. Patrick, thank you so much for taking the time to join me. Always fun to talk to you. If we don't talk before the holidays, have a great holiday season, but I'm sure we'll talk before then.
You too. Thanks so much for the invite on the show.
Your Tech Report will be right back.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.